Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen. It's that time again. It's the Doc Talk Podcast, hosted by a brother, a mentor, and a friend, Dr. Greg Roscoe in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, producing 2,500 miles to the west in Los Angeles, 347-205-9631. If you happen to miss it, 60 Minutes goes by quicker than Dan Rather doing 60 Minutes on Sunday nights. 347-205-9631. Tell all your friends. blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports Podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, more him, less of me. Let me lay the red carpet down, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic to Threes, Doc. How are you? How can people get a hold of you? And man, oh man, you have brought an arsenal to the crowds tonight.
I sure have. Everything, you know, out here in Pennsylvania is just wonderful, Mark. You know, the weather has been tremendous. We're in the 70s. The gorgeous change of leaves with this change of season. We think we're in L.A., as a matter of fact, here, Mark. People, you know, can get a hold of me as they normally have. GJRMD308@outlook.com. Looks like we have an awful lot of calls coming through already in the studio. You know, this evening, we're going to talk about a team approach. You know, we've been talking about many things. And I want to let our listeners know, you know, this is over our 100th show. So we're getting a little better at this. We're really getting a beautiful following. We've had excellent, excellent guests. And, you know, tonight, we want to talk about the team approach to care. And, you know, we've had Dr. Matt Varicella on talking about surgery, the results that he's had, and how things have gone, and his ideas and philosophy. Well, you know, being a good surgeon is one thing, but the aftercare is so important. And, you know, Matt will agree with that as well. And along those lines, right, Matt, you know, you have to have that good health getting these people up and getting them working again and getting them back to function.
Yeah, absolutely. That's critical. And we'll get into this a lot where, you know, and I talked with Samantha and George who are on this show as well, too. I always say there's my part with the surgery, but then really, you know, the work actually starts before the surgery itself in the prehab phase, which I'm sure they'll talk about, too. But then you talk about the surgical side, and then the work really begins afterwards, where for several months the athlete can get back to sport and not re-injure again.
Thank you. You know, Matt, what I'd like to do, I have two members of your team that are outstanding, and they each have different science backgrounds. I'd like to start with Dr. George Petula. George, welcome. You're a doctor of physical therapy. And you've been working in this field for greater than 20 years. And you've worked with Dr. Varicella as well on his patients, correct?
I have. Thank you.
Sure. Thanks for being here.
Oh, my pleasure, Dr. Roscoe.
And, George, you know, if we talk about, you know, physical therapy and the physical therapy approach, what does that mean? Because we're going to have Dr. Morgan on, you know, an athletic trainer, giving us another point of view. Can you help us with that? What's your point of view and philosophy in integrating, you know, function after surgery?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is absolutely a team approach to this, and I think that educating and helping people understand the things that they need to do to recover is key to getting them back to what they want to do. A lot of that really comes down to spending the time with the patients. You really want to get to know the patient. You really need to know what they want to do. It's one thing to say, I'm going to build up your strength and get you moving, but if you know what they want to do and the things that they need to do, that can really help you tailor that program for that particular patient.
And, you know, it's a matter then, George, you know, we talk about, and it's something we've talked about on prior shows, the four pillars of care. And I think Dr. Matt's aware of this as well, of course, where the first one is listening to the patient.
right? Getting to know your patient, communicating with your patient, getting to know what their goals are. And then we proceed with, you know, number two being our physical examination, number three, our diagnostic testing, and number four, decision making. And we all play a role in this overall. And, you know, George, when you have someone who you want to focus on the ACL and injury to the ACL, and we want to go ahead and, you know, we have our surgeon there repairing this area. And, you know, what do you do about it? You know, we talk about prehab. What do you do in prehab?
So I think it's really crucial to do a comprehensive evaluation for that patient, because everybody comes to the table with a different, it could be the same injury, but everybody comes with different problems. You know, some of the patients have more swelling, some have limited range of motion, some have much more limited strength. And I think sometimes it surprises them that as they come into this, how much they can lose in a quick period of time. And what we need to do is we need to work on those issues, because we want to set the table that when they head to that operating room, they're in the best possible position, because we want them to have, and why they're going for this is to get the best possible outcome they have. So I really think it's that doing the good evaluation, finding the problems, and really educating the patients that, of what things and factors they really need to focus on.
Beautiful. And, you know, George, with regard to, say, communication, are you in the process when you see these patients, say, like in the prehab phase, are you communicating with the surgeon saying, hey, this is what I think, you know, this could be this type of an injury, this is where we need to go with it, you know, what are your thoughts, Doc? You know, what do you want to do surgically? How can we work together here? Is that part of the conversation?
I think that's been an absolutely exciting, because this has been an awesome collaboration. You know, Dr. Matt does a great job with educating his patients. Samantha does a great job. We communicate with her frequently, and she really sets the table for the athletes to know what's going on. She gives us a lot of information, and the more I know coming in about what's going on with that athlete, the more our therapists know, you know, the better we can really deal with getting them moving and getting them back. So it's really been an awesome team effort with this.
So that's where this team comes in. Now, if we introduce another member, yes.
Well, sorry, I didn't want to cut you off there. I just wanted to give George a ton of credit there, also Samantha as well. She'll jump in here in a second. But when I started about 4.5 years ago, one of the main things that I reached out to George and I said, listen, we got to collaborate and communicate back and forth, whether it's through, you know, some form of text message with some sort of, you know, protected information, or through email saying, hey, I have this athlete that has this problem. And George a lot of times does a fantastic job of pointing that athlete in the right direction. Hey, I have an athlete with this specific type of problem. Which therapist, you know, has the most experience with this? And that's a critical thing that I think gets lost at a lot of institutions and universities, some, you know, big-name places where the communication breaks down. So when I first started, I was like, we got to make sure that we're all on the same page. And, you know, sure, we have our mishaps here and there, but that's been a pivotal part that I think is lost a lot of times in medicine, and that just emphasizes how important communication is. Go ahead.
Thank you for that. Well, you know, I'd like to go on. We have another very important member of this team, and this is Dr. Samantha Morgan. Now, Dr. Morgan, has a doctor in athletic training. And she spent a lot of years in education, a lot of years taking care of patients. And Dr. Sam, how are you tonight?
I'm good. How's everybody?
Well, I think we're all pretty good. Sam, you know, as far as your role in the, say, post-operative patients, you know, how do you collaborate? Who do you collaborate with? You know, when do you collaborate? You know, when does the team start to work together? Can you help me with that?
Well, yeah, so basically, usually I start everything. So it starts with about an hour-long phone call with the parents, you know, of the athlete, figuring out what happened. You know, do you have a video? What sports? What is the goals, aspirations? Are we a college player? Are we having college hopes and dreams? And all of those, I'm getting all of the information. And then it's talking with, you know, George and Dr. Matt and saying, hey, this is the situation, this is the kid, this is the timeline, you know, and kind of working into all of those things. And then we literally from there hit the ground running. In terms of getting them into prehab, are they working with their athletic trainer at their college, at their school? Are they working with physical therapy? If not, this is, you know, who can I call? Who do you want to work with?
Sure.
You know, are you out of state, in state? How do you need lodging? You know, I mean, I take all of it and then, you know, reach out where I need to. You know, and they're like, yeah, we'll do it tomorrow. Like, I literally post off. George has seen somebody on Saturday. I see them on Sunday, you know, get them back on.
Wow.
George on, like, I mean, that over the holiday, like, there's no days off for,
wow,
you know, our group of people. Like, it's,
yeah.
I mean, it's literally a whirlwind because then I'm prepping,
yeah,
them on surgery and how physical therapy is going to work because we go day one post-op. Like, that's
got
huge.
It.
And that has to be facilitated with George and his team and, you know, the other people that we use throughout the hospital and at this point throughout the country because of how aggressive Dr. Matt's surgery is. And that's how we get
got
the
it.
Results that we get.
Well, talking about results,
yeah,
you know, Sam, if I can, you know, is there a kind of an approach here for our listeners? You know, Matt had mentioned about email or texting or things like that. And do we sit down at, you know, a morning conference, you know, with PT, with our surgeon, you know, with our athletic trainer, and look at our cases, review MRIs, review progress reports? What are the logistics? How is this done? Because you do it so efficiently and get good results. What is your technique to do this?
What was that last question? I couldn't hear you.
I was saying, you know, what is the process that you use to go ahead and, you know, put your heads together? You know, is there a morning conference that you'll sit down and discuss the patient, you know, their MRI, their progress reports? You know, how do you sit and get that all information out to everybody? You know, is it more electronically you're doing it, or is it more of a sit-down? Go ahead.
No, we don't have time for sit-down with all of our schedules, but it's, you know, sometimes I'm popping in. I'm probably the one that's the most mobile, so I may stop into physical therapy and, you know, say, hey, situation, it's a call, it's an email to set up a meeting. You know, I might reach out to Dr. Matt. I mean, it's all hours of the day. This could be at 6 o'clock in the morning. It could be at 11 o'clock at night, you know, because
wow,
somebody got hurt at a game. And, you know, us athletic trainers, we don't end until 10 p.m. So I'm getting
phone calls
at 11:30 at night, and I'm putting them on the schedule to see Dr. Matt the next morning. So it's very individualized, and then it's just, you know, reaching out and setting up a communication. Usually email is the best, it's the most secure, and then if you do a text message, it's, hey, situation, very minimal, and we already know. And it's like, do you have the MRI? Is it on it? Can I read it? Is it uploaded? Do you have the report? What's going on? Like, all of those information I already have based on my initial conversation with the parent and the athlete. So then
got
I
it.
Can spread it out, and it cuts down on having to have as many meetings or conversations.
Sure.
And then we dictate to who we need to when.
Well, you know,
so,
very good.
Well,
go ahead, Matt.
Greg, if I can, I think a nice way to tie all this together let me lay out an example of how a situation happens a lot of times. Let's say a soccer player from Chicago tears her ACL, and maybe they find me or my team online. And, you know, a lot of times they'll call into the office, and then Sam typically will field the call. And then Sam reaches out and is talking with the family and the athlete. And then she's doing the job of a lot of times, you know, Sam, for her background, you know, obviously she's, you know, Dr. Sam Morgan, she's well-educated and everything. She's also my ACL navigator. So that's a position that our hospital system created to help coordinate the care and facilitate getting these athletes into our system so we can get them fixed. So on top of everything else she's doing, she's coordinating that. So she's gathering the imaging. She's reaching out to me. She's usually touching base with George and the physical therapy team. We're figuring out where are this athlete's from, how are they going to come in, what's a reasonable surgery date for them once they get their prehab set up, because that's always the priority, and then we just coordinate the care after there. So really Sam's playing the quarterback role. That's how I've always viewed it, where she's a lot of times the one who's reaching out and talking to the athlete and the parents, setting the foundation there, and then it just kind of flows after that.
Got it. And so did Sam, you're in a sense the facilitator, communicator. If a family were to call in to your institution, you would talk directly with them about what is the situation, what happened, and then you would go from there putting the team players together.
Yeah, and usually that happens within a few hours of us getting the phone call. If we get a phone call or an email, I'm calling you that day, because it can happen so fast. The fastest that we had was I talked to a parent on a Tuesday. They got on a plane that night. They saw Dr. Matt on Wednesday, and we did surgery on Thursday. They had rehab with George on Friday, Saturday. I saw them on Sunday. So, they're playing, you know, professional ice hockey at 19 years old. So, I mean, and that was a kid who was going to give up his state. So it's so fast, because that's a career that was saved.
Got it. And that's a life that was saved.
That fuels everything.
You know, as far as when we're talking about this whole sequence and how this plays out, you know, is there a cookbook here? You know, when we talk about prehab, do we say, you know, Dr. Fatula, you know, he knows the prehab is going to be this and this and this for this injury. Dr. Morgan, you're saying, okay, I know it's this. Here's my kind of a cookbook order sequence. Do you have or is it more custom-made? Yes.
I made it through MedBridge, which is a site we have, platform for the hospital, and I created an ACL program that's the kitchen sink, and I wrote the exercise parameters as a high volume and low weight to get as much strength and become masters of the exercises that they're getting, you know, day one post-op and things like that. And you know, George has done a great job of, you know, giving his expertise as to what he feels is, you know, good and, you know, and things like that. So it really worked out well.
Wonderful. Well, you know, we were talking about, I think you all have used the word, you know, athlete, professional athlete, et cetera. And, you know, what happens, you know, because the assumption is this kid's healthy, no comorbidities, we can run them through our process without worrying about any other medical condition. You know, what if we kind of turn the table here and we've got someone that, you know, has some comorbidities, someone that's an asthmatic, someone that has, you know, some heart disease. Dr. Matt, what happens there if they call in and say, you know, I'm an engineer, I have, you know, I've had a heart attack, I tore my ACL, what can you do for me?
Yeah.
How does that change the table?
Yeah, that's a really good point. And, you know, number one, it kind of depends on, you know, usually an athlete, or I guess we're not talking about an athlete, but even a weekend warrior or somebody that, you know, has a professional job, if they tear their ACL, it depends on their activity goals. You know, what do they want to do with their knee?
Sure.
They're relatively, if they're sedentary or they have a desk job and they're not that active, and let's say they tear their ACL, they might be able to get by with just the brace. Again, it all kind of comes back to their activity. Even if they have asthma or other comorbidities, if they want to hike on the weekends and, you know, play pickleball or racquetball to stay in shape, a lot of times, even if they do have comorbidities, I still will recommend doing an ACL reconstruction, even if, you know, again, it kind of comes back to their activity goals. That discussion's kind of happening in the office, and that's where we figure it out. Because sometimes a patient may come in, if they're a little bit older, they have arthritis, and they tear their ACL, maybe an ACL reconstruction is not the right answer. It might be a total joint reconstruction, for example, a total knee. I just had a retired Navy individual who, similar situation, but he elected to go with the total knee. That's kind of that standpoint. George and Sam could probably talk a little bit more on, you know, how do they approach the rehab if somebody's a little bit, you know, not as healthy. I still am the type that says let's push them because you don't want that knee to get stiff and painful. So let's still try to have them go as hard as they can because that's from my experience. If you rehab that knee more aggressively, that's always going to be better.
Got it. And, you know, we can go to Dr. Fatula at this point. George, you know, when you have somebody that, you know, maybe, you know, is not a good surgical candidate, you know, what options do you have in your toolbox that you can still help them?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, evaluating them and seeing what they need to do is a big part of that. But we can go anything. Strength is always a key to most any of these injuries, whether it's arthritis. I mean, you're building up those muscles because that's what's giving you that shock absorption at your joint and letting you do those functional activities. So we need to really focus that they get that strength, they get that range of motion. You know, if they have swelling and inflammation, we can do other treatments to get that down, such as cold compression. The other thing is some of those patients, like at our clinics, we have aquatic therapy. And sometimes we can get these patients either in the pool where they can't tolerate the loading on those joints at all or as early. And we get them in a water-based environment to start them, get the weight off that joint and allow them to get strengthened up, get the motion going. In our pool at Dubois, we have a treadmill here. We can get people walking and moving and running quicker. And we have that at our other facilities at Elk and Brookville that we can get people in the pool. So I think that's a great tool as well for people who may be a little slower, maybe higher pain levels and really need to get back to moving again.
And, you know, is the pool therapy something that's for everyone or very selected cases?
If I could do it on everyone, I would do it on everyone.
That's great. And, you know, as far as wanting to do it, you know, what are the determining factors of who would get that and who would not? Is it an insurance question? Or is it a physical question, you know, a cardiac question? What is that determination?
You're right. It runs more into the physical assessment, just like you talked about. There are certain health conditions and reasons why you would or wouldn't get a patient into a pool. You know, we got to do that health assessment, that physical assessment, and then, you know, really make the determination. But, you know, the vast majority of patients can and probably would benefit at times.
Beautiful. You know, we're going to go to our questions in the studio just momentarily. But I'd like to mention, you know, with regard to, you know, rehab, and this is post-operative, and I know, you know, you're coming in on Saturday and Sunday and all that kind of thing. What are you doing for these patients that are in rehab? You know, if someone has an ACL repair, you know, Matt, what do you request? What do you expect Samantha or George to do for these patients? You know, what is the treatment regime?
Yeah. Well, early on, and it's, again, shout out to their teams and our teams really, is, you know, if I do the surgery on Friday and somebody's from out of town and they're only in our area for about, you know, 5 to 7 days, they're staying at a hotel, I can't thank these guys enough. They're working with them the next day. I'm always saying, you know, the next day is going to be the best for them because that's where you can really get the swelling under control
Wow.
I tell every single athlete, even if I just do a simple knee scope on the knee and I'm really not doing a big reconstruction procedure or reconstructing a ligament, if I just stick a scope in the knee and you have to run some fluid through that knee, just from that swelling, the normal body response is going to be the brain's going to tell that quad muscle to shut down. And that actually starts with the injury in and of itself. So they're already, I tell the athlete and patient this every single time. I say, you're already, like, fighting behind the eight ball because just any injury, it's your body's just going to shut down those muscles. So the more they can work on that prehab and then postoperatively right away, especially day one, getting those muscles to fire, getting that quad muscle to contract, and getting that swelling down, those are kind of the big things. And then the range of motion is really important because the first 2 or 3 months, but certainly 4 to 6 weeks.
What is range of motion?
That's a really good question. I'm glad you asked that because that's probably not that intuitive. So if you think of your knee just straight out across, and Mark Mancini would say this is where the video would help, but if your knee is just, if you're laying down and your knee is straight out, that's what we would call 0 degrees. Now, as you start to bend that knee or flex it, meaning bringing your heel a little bit closer to your butt area, and as you bend that up, we look at the different degrees from that 0 degrees. So if you think of back to your geometry classes and using fancy protractors and everything, but, you know, a normal knee is anywhere from like 0 to 120 degrees or even 130 or 140, depending on how flexible someone is. But that's what we want to do in terms of range of motion, because the important thing is after any type of knee surgery or knee injury is that knee wants to become swollen and stiff. And then as that stiffness kind of sets in, that triggers more inflammation and pain throughout that joint. So afterwards, after a, for example, an ACL reconstruction, if that athlete does not move that knee and push through some of that, pain and discomfort, knee's going to become stiff. That knee's going to become stiff. And then it'll get scar tissue. And in some severe cases, I'll actually have to take a patient or an athlete back for a manipulation where I have to put them asleep on the table, bend their knee. Again, they're asleep and break up some scar tissue. So we never want to have to do that. And thankfully, because my team on this call and beyond, they're so excellent, I've rarely ever had to do that to anybody. But that's why we're so concerned about that.
Beautiful. You know, I want to interrupt our discussion at this point. Mr. Mancini has quite a few questions in the studio. And what if we go to the studio? Mr. Mancini, you want to give us a little bit of information from our listeners? What are they asking?
Yes. This show is picking up steam. You guys are approaching the 400 level right now, but Dan coming in from Las Cruces basically says, does a torn ACL ever fully heal? That's a great question.
Yeah, Matt, go ahead.
Now, sometimes when an athlete or a patient injures their ACL, they could sprain it. And what that means is that ligament still has fibers that are intact, but it might get stretched a little bit, it might get bruised a little bit, and it'll get swollen. If the ACL completely ruptures, which a lot of times we know, we've all heard the, you know, NFL player plants, hears a loud pop, and that means the bone actually collides and that ACL fully ruptures, that's not going to heal by itself. And that's the reason that these injuries are so important. The ACL, the location of it, unfortunately, it has a very poor blood supply. So even if it gets sprained or partially torn, it does a very poor job of healing itself. And that's why, depending on the study, you look at 50 to 70% of the time, an athlete with a partial ACL might end up needing that reconstructed, because it does not do a very good job of healing itself.
Wow. All right, Mark, go ahead.
Bob from Pompano Beach basically says, what are the long-term effects of a torn ACL, and can he live his life?
Yeah, so another
Matt,
great question.
Matt, you want to handle that again?
Yeah.
But yeah, we can
yeah,
do
I
it
can,
to Samantha
I can,
as well.
I'll just say my point, and then I'd be curious to get George and Samantha's take on it because
yep.
they would see patients a little bit farther down the line, maybe somebody who has a chronic ACL, chronic rupture, meaning it's months or years down the line, and they haven't had a ligament. So number one, yes, you can live your life. It depends on the demands that you have to do. I mentioned before, if somebody has a desk job or they're just, you know, they like to maybe do some basic walking, there are a lot of people out there in the world walking around with no ACL. There are even some athletes that are famous for not having an ACL. Because the structure of their knee, they might make up for it with having an ACL constitution, and their muscles are so strong and so dynamic, and actually they can stabilize the bones with additional –
without it.
With, yes, exactly.
But, you know,
ACL
again
– copers, yeah.
Sure. And, you know,
yeah.
Samantha,
so,
what are
yeah.
your thoughts about that?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I 100% agree. And it's we look at this program, we look at the full kinematics and biomechanics of the person. So when Dr. Matt's talking about their copers and their compensating, usually they end up with something else starts to hurt. So my back hurts or my hip hurts. Why? Because how the body now has to shift and compensate for the dysfunction
sure.
in the knee, the whole body is connected. So now we're looking at, well, no one ever looked at your knee and you're having all this hip pain. Well, when we finally went through it and got your hip fixed, oh, you had a torn ACL. So when we're looking, at least from my perspective, when I see the athlete later or, you know, the person later, we're working to fix that and fix everything else so that we're not having a snowball effect into something else.
Sure. And George, what are your thoughts about, you know, physical therapy on that and not repairing?
I mean, I think physical therapy is one of the approaches because you definitely need to have strength if you don't have the ACL. I mean, because one of the
right.
risks is if you don't have an ACL and that knee is giving way on you, you know, you have a chance to hurt something else. And I think that's
sure.
the big thing. And where they talk about, you know, how if your knee feels stable and it's not giving out, you might be okay. But if you're somebody who your knee's buckling, giving out, you know, do you hurt something else in your knee? Do you fall and, you know, hurt your wrist? So,
right.
you know, other injuries around that are definitely a risk if you don't have a stable knee.
And, you know, go ahead.
Yeah, just one more point I wanted to say because
sure.
I think it's important for listeners to know this, is that sometimes, you know, we've looked at data for the last, you know, several decades on one of the popular things used to be younger patients, pediatric patients, when they tore their ACL, the outcomes weren't as good based on the technique of how we used to fix them. Well, what we found on studying those patients over the ensuing like 10, 15, 20 years is a lot of times there was secondary damage to the joint. Now, what does that mean? That is referring to, for example, a meniscus tear. The meniscus is this shock absorber that's in the knee that helps prevent arthritis. Well, if a knee does not have an ACL, even if, you know, George or Sam, they do an amazing job of strengthening up those muscles, if there is that shifting mechanism because the ACL is not able to stabilize the knee, the brunt of that force a lot of times gets taken by the meniscus. So the classic example will be, you know, a 12-year-old who tears his or her ACL. They don't get it fixed. Yeah, they do physical therapy, build their strength back up, but then they end up coming back into the doctor's office because they have a bad tear in their meniscus because their knee wasn't fully stable. So, and then in
sure.
another severe situation, you'll see a cartilage injury. So it's important to seek care and seek a provider's opinion on that because you don't want to damage that joint and put that young patient or young athlete at risk of getting an early knee replacement, for example.
Got it. I mean, I think, you know, what we're saying here with this is if one sustains an injury of that caliber, and Matt, I don't care if they're 60 or 50 or 15, they still need to have it. The body can compensate so long, but we're going to wear
yeah.
other parts out. So I think
yeah.
the point here from Samantha as well as George, is if they have a problem, let's get it checked by a provider. Let's go on, Mark.
Yeah, let me take one more, and I'll give it back to you guys. Michael coming in from Eugene, Oregon, basically says, great show, guys. I love this. I learn a lot from you guys. He said, I tore my ACL injury, and basically the one thing that he had avoided pushing through the pain was walking without support too early. Wow, that's, I never knew that.
Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, well, so I correct me if I'm wrong. I believe he's saying he avoided walking with support, meaning crutches. I'm assuming that was the take on that. But
yes.
So,
well, no, he had
what
the ACL injury, and he had to push through the pain, but walking without support too early, you want to try to stay away from.
Yeah, absolutely. So the other thing, too, that somebody with an ACL tear is going to feel is that you'll see them actually walk into the office, and they'll be just going in a straight line. So even if they have to turn direction, you'll see that they avoid going side to side. So think of like a running back that's juking and trying to cut and hit a hole. In that situation, obviously that's an extreme situation, but what people will do is they'll just walk in a straight line, and then they'll go to turn, and they almost like make a robotic turn 90 degrees and then try to go the next direction, because they're trying to avoid that side-to-side shift because they don't have that rotational stability in the knee, and that's one of the crucial roles of the ACL. So, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Yes, and, you know, thank you very much, Mark. We'll come back to you in about 20 minutes or so for further questions. But, you know, Matt, maybe let's start here again. You know, how about telling our listeners again, what is the ACL? Just to review that a little bit. You know, where is that?
Yeah, so the ACL tissue, it's a ligament, and it spans from the femur or the end of the thigh bone to the top of the tibia or the shin bone. And what it does, it's on the inside, very inside inner part of the knee. There's a notch in between that femur, the femur, the thigh bone. And what it does is it protects the knee from shifting in both a frontwards and backwards direction, but also in a rotational direction as well, too. The ACL has two thick bundles. They're called the anteromedial
yes.
bundle and the posterolateral bundle. And both of those bundles do their job in terms of stabilizing the knee. But again, it's very important to protect the other structures of the knee in terms of stability.
So, Matt, what we're saying is the knee is a very sophisticated joint with many
Absolutely.
Fragile parts that overall
yes.
they have to work in harmony. And when we get a problem with one, as the anterior cruciate, we need to get it fixed so we don't damage the other parts. And, you know, Matt, just another point here, which we can talk to Sam and George. How do the injuries differ from a football injury ACL, a basketball injury ACL? Is there a difference in these injuries, in these knee problems?
That is a great topic that, Sam and George could speak to this as well, too. The classic mechanism a lot of times in a sport like soccer or gymnastics, the buzzword is kind of a non-contact injury. If you turn on ESPN, anytime they're talking about an athlete that gets an injury, everybody always clenches their fists and, you know, their teeth whenever they hear, oh, so-and-so went down with a non-contact injury. The reason that's important is that's a classic mechanism. If somebody lands or tries to plant their foot and go to cut, the bones sometimes will shift on each other, and if they collide, that'll lead to a certain mechanism to cause an ACL rupture. A sport like soccer is a little different than a sport like football because of the amount of contact. So a lot of times, or football or wrestling even, for example, you'll see more violent mechanisms. For example, an athlete gets tackled in a certain way or has a direct helmet blow to that knee, or a wrestler gets hit his knee kind of torqued into a certain position. Sometimes with those more violent injuries, you can get an ACL rupture in addition to some of the other ligaments that surround that knee, and sometimes multiple ligaments need to be repaired. And, you know, God forbid,
wow.
Sometimes even most severe, even in severe cases, you could see a, for example, a knee dislocation where three or four ligaments of the knee get torn at the same time. But, yeah, there are definitely those different mechanisms. Yep.
You know, if I can, Mark, I just got an email. How does arthritis affect a knee if there's an ACL tear? What happens if it has a lot of arthritis in it?
Well, and that is that's another good question. The way arthritis kind of impacts that is that if somebody already has a significant amount of pre-existing arthritis, sometimes the ACL tear is kind of the final blow, and that creates more and more arthritis. So in some situations, that option, like I was saying, if they've gone through the physical therapy and they've tried cortisone injections, steroid injections, other things to help alleviate that knee pain, sometimes the answer for that patient might be a total knee replacement. Because replacing the arthritis also helps stabilize the knee. And actually, with most of the total knee replacements, you don't need an ACL or a PCL, so you get knee stability from replacement components.
So that, you know, overall, we would individualize the care. And, you know,
Absolutely. Someone
like Dr. Fatula, you know, your physical therapy, if someone has, you know, arthritis, what does you as a physical therapist do about that in trying to handle that dilemma with the ACL tear?
Yeah, I mean, I think we just look at all the things that they can and can't do, and then we try to balance that out with, you know, what's the reality of how well they're going to do. I think you most of the time you do the best you can, just like Dr. Barrichello said. First of all, go to building all the strength you can. Take all the medical options you have, and then if you're at the point where this is still limiting your function, then you really have to move forward and look at what your other options surgically, whether it be a knee replacement or other.
Sure. And, you know, George, you mentioned the word several times now about strengthening. Could you tell me, what are you talking about? What are we trying to strengthen? Is it the collateral muscles? You know, the support muscles, or we trying to strengthen the ligaments? What is you as a physical therapist try to do here? Can you help me with that?
Yep, so most of the time when we're talking about specifics to the knee, we're talking about the quadriceps, which is the thigh muscle, and then the hamstrings, which is the muscle, the big muscle in the back of your legs. Those are kind of the primary knee muscles that support your knee, and they bend and straighten your knee. So those are the tend to be the focus muscles when we think about function and getting a knee stable. But it really also comes down to like Samantha mentioned about how important it is to look at all the links in a chain and look at the hip muscles as well, because if someone has a weak side hip muscle, they start tilting and leaning when they walk, and it's going to put more stress on the knee, and that can cause more instability, more wear and tear on the knee. And even if you build the knee, they don't have a good hip, they're not going to be happy. They're not going to get the outcomes they're looking for. So you really have to comprehensively look above and beyond that joint. But most of what we're talking is really strengthening the muscles up around the knee and above and below it.
Beautiful. And Samantha, you know, you as an athletic specialist, you know, do you work with your professional athletes in strengthening, maybe making their core stronger, you know, working with the other limb? How do you approach that, Samantha?
I like to use, like, multifaceted exercises. So at some point we may go squat into an overhead press. Looking at core, I have a whole plank series and a non-plank series, which forces you to engage not just your core but other movements in and of itself, and then looking at, you know, what is their goal in terms of what are they trying to get back to, and creating a movement pattern into an exercise and then weight and load it and transfer of center of gravity and all of those things. So I come at it at a full kitchen sink approach.
Sure.
You know, and putting in an external stimulus, you know, whether or not you have to catch or you got to close your eyes or you got to turn your head, something, you know, to kind of tax the body as well.
And so that you'd like to have them do the most they can do when they're in there for rehabilitation. It's not a namby-pamby type of service here. We want
absolutely
them to put out.
We don't call it Sam's Boot Camp for nothing.
Okay.
So
we're,
I mean,
kicking.
Yes, all day,
yes,
every day, 5 days a week. I give them at least one day off.
And, you know, when you're dealing even with certain levels of patients, whether it's a high school athlete, a college athlete, you know, a professional, maybe a retired professional, you want them to work their ass off in order to go ahead and get strong and get better. Because the result,
yeah,
is we want them to be the best they can be with our help and with our therapy.
Yeah, for your retired athletes and, you know, persons, it's, you know, being able to play with the grandkids. That's,
sure,
you know, to me, that's the same. So I look at rehabbing, you know, somebody that is 60 the same way as I would rehab a 14-year-old. But I take it as an individual person-by-person basis. Our programming is as a foundation, but every single,
yeah,
one is individualized specifically to them and their needs and their capabilities. And I go,
wow,
with a high volume, so get your endurance first because you're going to be walking everywhere. If you can only walk two steps, I can't have you be lifting, you know, 100 pounds and then ask you to walk,
right,
a mile with it, you know. So, and then at some,
yes,
point it does balance out, you know, and it's, you have, and that's,
sure,
why you have to work with physical therapy as well, because they have equipment and they have tools that I just don't have access to when,
okay,
I'm doing something, and vice versa, you know, and
so,
you can't have one without the other.
And that's the beauty of the team approach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, right, Georgia, I mean, are you the same way that you can do what you do, but you're going to ask Samantha to help from that training standpoint,
right,
to rehabilitate this patient?
And I think part of the team approach is, part of it is, you know, we have a great skilled group of physical therapists and athletic trainers through our system, but it started from Dr. Barrichello laying out his philosophy to people that, you know, we can,
wow,
be still, we can know what we're doing, but if we don't know what route to go, if we don't get enough information, it's hard to really get those max benefit for patients. So knowing the philosophy, same thing. Samantha's laid out some good programs and protocols, and their philosophy is, you guys know what you're doing. Take everybody individualized. You might need to slow down for one person, but you might need to speed up for the next one. I have had, you know, we talked about athletes, but just like Samantha said, you talk about others. I have several industrial athletes right now. I had a woman this week that says, you know, she's in her 20s and had surgery by Dr. Matt. She says, I need to be able to run after my kids. I have another guy who's,
wow,
30 that says, I need to go back to, I work at a lumber mill. I need to be able to do this. So really taking that and individualizing it and pushing them to get back to those activities is really crucial. And that's where the knowing the info and having the team approach really, really comes in great.
Beautiful. And, you,
yeah,
know, George, when you're working with them, both you and Samantha, you know, to encourage them, you know, are you saying, look, you want to get back out there? You want to get with those grandchildren? Let's push harder. Let's push harder. Do you use that a little bit of a philosophy?
I think motivation and pushing is a big part of it. And the funny thing is, and I know Samantha is great at this, and this is what she pushes, is sometimes people always want to say, how many do you want me to do? And we,
okay,
don't like to just say, let's do two sets of 10, right? We want to go till you're tired, where you're fatigued, you've worked your hardest. So,
wow,
that's what we want to,
yeah,
go for.
Yeah.
We say,
wow,
I tell them, I want your body to tell me when it's had enough. And there's that part of the exercise parameters is that if I said, you know, like George said, 20 reps, but they're like, man, I could have done 30. Well, then why did we not try to do more when your capability was to be able to do more? You know, but if you can only do 6, I take 6. And then the next day I'm going to say, yeah, I still want you to do 30, but you gave me 8. That is a win in my book because we're seeing the progress, and the body should dictate, you know, and that for that specific exercise. And then I go to the next exercise. Well, maybe they could do 30 of that exercise because when we, like Dr. Matt also said, when you have the injury, things get shut off. So I like to use a lot of analogies. So we basically turn the light switch off, and now it's a dimmer switch, and we have to slowly turn everything back on. And if we can get slowly turned back on, we're going to get a great result.
Sure.
Oh, and the other side of it.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Sam.
Oh, the other side of it is that our team does a great job of the mental and emotional, like, knowledge and concern for our rehab of all of our patients. We don't just run them through things and not, you know, ask them how they're doing, how they're feeling, you know, are they more emotional today? Because it's a literal roller coaster, you know. So
yeah.
We're getting, you know, even patient-reported outcome measures of them telling us how they feel, because they can't always articulate how they feel mentally, emotionally, or what they feel they can and can't do. So that's also what sets us apart.
You know, Samantha, go ahead.
Well, Greg, I was just going to say that, you know, I think that another part that gets missed a lot of times is that mental aspect that Sam was talking about.
Yes.
Even the world's most elite athletes, when they have an ACL injury or even, you know, meniscus tear, some type of setback, or a knee injury, we have to, the first thing that I always say to them is I tell them, you know, you're going to come back from this injury, and my goal, like every single athlete, is that you're going to come back stronger than you were before this. So you're never going to have to, you know, have surgery again or have an injury like that. And if you set the tone like that, that really gets them to buy into it, and they say, okay, you know, I can do this. I can bounce back stronger. And we've had tremendous results with that, and the majority of our athletes do hit those parameters.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
I literally had a conversation with one of our collegiate athletes, and he's on a little bit slower, and I said, this is going to change you as a person, that you're going to grow from this in a way you never expected. And he said, it's already happening. He's like 6 weeks out, and he said, I look at life differently, and I have different goals and aspirations for how I want to live my life and how I can be a better person and things like that. So it starts really early in this process.
I love the process, Sam. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Just keep that up. We're running out of time. Mr. Mancini, do you have another question or two before we summarize?
Yeah, Robin from Warren, Ohio says this show is great. Loves the doctors and everything coming in, and the staff, keep up the good work. Dylan from Chelmsford, Mass. Says you can learn a lot listening to you guys on a weekly basis. Another gentleman in Denton, Texas says it's prime time Thursday, right before the football games. The doc talk.
That's right.
We
That's
love it.
It.
Hey,
we love
as we start to wrap this up with less than 5 minutes and some change, if you guys want to recap it, because I know part two is coming next Thursday, November 2nd, same time.
Yes. You know, I'd like to let our listeners know that would like to continue this discussion, talking about some NFL players and how they have done with a lot of good input. And we want to continue that next Thursday evening. And I'd like, Dr. Matt, do you want to give us a little summary tonight? And we'll have Dr. Samantha and then Dr. George just give us a minute summary, and then we'll close the show. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. So ACL injuries are anterior cruciate ligament injuries. That's a very important stabilizing ligament to the knee. When it gets injured, The majority of times that's in athletes, although sometimes you can see it in industrial athletes, as George said. It's important to seek a care with a provider, a licensed medical provider or somebody with experience to help explain that injury. Maybe you need surgery, maybe you don't, but that's, up for a discussion with, a specialist. And, if you do need to go through the surgery, just make sure you get plugged into a system that has a comprehensive team approach, get started on the therapy before the surgery, then you have surgery by, a great surgeon, and then the work really continues afterwards with several months of therapy to get you back to sport or get you back to whatever activity you need to get to.
Thanks, Matt. Samantha, can you summarize for us your feelings on the training and about this injury?
Yeah, so the training and this injury, it is literally a full body experience. It is mental, it is emotional, it is physical, and in all equal parts. And at any point in time, you have to, cater to those needs. So when you need to cater to, those strengths and, therapy and physical demands, you need to. When you need to deal with the mental and emotional, you need to seek out and, let your clinicians and stuff know so that they can, help you through this process. And you just have to obtain, communication. I mean, that's
sure.
The foundation of
that's
why
thing.
This works. Yeah.
Beautiful. Dr. Petula, can you give us a little bit of a summary from the PT standpoint on ACL?
Yeah, I think it's really crucial that you get a good evaluation by good skilled therapists and health professionals, and they really need to stress how hard it is, and you're gonna do well, you're going to get better, but what you get out of it is what you're going to put into it. So really getting that message across is a big part of the picture.
Boy, thank you. And, you're summarizing, we've had three great professionals tonight, letting our audience know we talk about these knee injuries. You want to go to a place that has qualified people, and you can see this team approach, a good surgeon, physical therapy, sports athletic trainer, and then have their heart and soul in getting you better. That's how you win. That's how this team has won and continues to be top-notch. What do you have, Mr. Mancini?
Well, as we wrap this up, let everybody know how they can get a hold of you and so we can reconvene here next Thursday night with the same cast of characters.
Yes. Matt, how can they get a hold of you?
Yeah, so office is 814-375-6200. Like I said, if you're across the country and you have an ACL tear, you can call in, speak with me or Sam Morgan or anybody on our team, really. Yeah. And my email's mavaricello@phhealthcare.org. If you send me a note, I can reach out to you. We also do telemedicine consults as well, too.
Beautiful. Sam, how can people get a hold of you?
They can get a hold of me, same thing, by calling the office. Remember, we're option one. And then my email is slmorgan@phhealthcare.org. And then I will personally call you back from my direct work line. And then that's kind of how you get the rest of my numbers.
Good. Dr. Fatola, how can they get a hold of you, sir?
Yeah, you can email me here at Penn Highlands at gmfatula@phhealthcare.org. And if you want to call, our number here at the DuBois Clinic is 814-375-3372, and we can direct you if you need help.
Excellent. Listeners, you can get a hold of me, GJRMD308@outlook.com, and I'll be glad to again reach out. We've been getting many, many emails, and we do our best in trying to answer and get to you quickly. So I want to thank you for being so sensitive to our show. And Mr. Mancini, do you want to close it?
Yeah, basically, I'd like to say thanks for the great team you've assembled here, guys. We'll keep it going next Thursday, same time, same place, across these airwaves. For the tribe in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Matt Varicello, Samantha Morgan, George Fatula, and you, Doc, Greg Roscoe. Here's truly Mark Mancini in Los Angeles saying, tell all your friends about it as we pick up steam here on this show. God bless and have a safe weekend. We'll see you next week across these airwaves.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
All right, see ya.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Bye.